Chris Perkins, Dolphins columnist for the Sun Sentinel. I told you we were going to get that Sun Sentinel in there.
That's not coming out of my mouth.
Hey, Perk, you don't have to be part of that. How you doing, Perk? Chris, you there?
He hung up. I wouldn't say the name of that paper, and he's boycotting us.
Hey, Perk, you there, bud?
I'm here. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Okay.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Hey.
All right. I got my earbuds in. I don't know if I'm talking to you through my phone or earbuds, but let's do it.
Listen, we're glad to have you. Hey, Perk, first of all, you guys been able to go out there and see the rookie stuff at all or no?
No. They don't let us out there for that. We'll see the full squad next week after the veterans report. But look, I'm looking forward to seeing both sets of players, right? The rookies and the veterans, because there's a lot to prove from both groups.
Have you ever seen anything more open from, I don't want to say 90 all the way down to the best player, but boy, it feels like it's 75 or 80 strong. They're going to have a chance to not only make the team, but you have a good camp. Hell, you might be playing a little bit on offense and defense. I've never seen anything like this group.
Yeah, no, it's wide open, Joe. It takes me back to 2019 when they had that rebuild going and you didn't really know who was going to be in what position. Now, the strange thing about this rebuild from that standpoint, a lot of these starting jobs have kind of been decided, right? We know who's going to be at left tackle, left guard. We know the starting offensive line. We don't know the starting receivers, but we know all the other starting positions defensively. We have a pretty good idea of who's going to start. Now, you know, that linebacking trio, we don't know who's going to get the majority of the snaps, but right now we know who's going to start. So it's going to be a lot of positions, only a few starting positions, I think, are going to be open, but the competition for those positions is going to be fierce. And then the competition for the backups is going to be, you know, it's just going to be wild. It's just a every man for himself thing as far as no allegiances to, you know, this administration drafted this player, so we're going to keep him. I think it's a clean slate from that standpoint.
All right, Perk, no proven receiver, edge rusher, or cornerback. Give me a surprise name at one of these positions. Who's going to step up and a month from now we'll be saying, okay, maybe this guy's the answer?
You know what? I was disappointed to see that Storm Duck is going on the PUP list, right? The physically unable to perform list. The cornerback, the self-made kid, undrafted. I believe this is his third season. But, you know, he had that knee injury that he was recovering from. I thought Storm was going to be one of those prize people. As far as veterans, I think Juju Brents at the cornerback position is going to be somebody who emerges. He's a guy who has had injury problems, and that's always held him back, but a really good, productive player. I think Chris Johnson, the rookie, is going to be good at the slot corner, the 27th pick of this draft, the other first-round pick, aside from Caden Proctor. And then, you know what, but Dave and Joe, I don't see anybody emerging at edge rusher. You know, at receiver, you could see Chris Bell, maybe Caleb Douglas, the third-round pick out of Texas Tech. At edge rusher, I don't see Chop emerging. I don't see Josh Uche, David Ojabo, Max Llewellyn. And that's not a knock on any of those guys. It's just where they are at that position right now. I see potential at receiver and at corner. I think edge rusher right now has flatlined.
Let's talk about the wide receiver position because it's tied into Malik Willis and what's going to happen. And listen, he's going to need some help. I know everybody's got an opinion on Malik Willis already and what it's going to look like. And, you know, coming off whatever happened, if you like the way he played, some people like the way he played this offseason and some didn't in his practices and OTAs and mini camps. But you got to have some guys get some separation out there. If I was to tell you that Tolbert, Washington, and Atwell would be your starters, could you see that when you go three wide? Would that be your first three as from what you've seen so far?
That would probably be my first three, yeah. But look, I'm not sure they're going to get that so-called wide receiver one this season. I think this is going to be a multi-year project. And look, when you don't sign Tyreek Hill and you trade Jaylen Waddle, there's going to be a come down from that, right? So that's what they're going to experience here. And, you know, look, I'm with a lot of people. I'm a big Chris Bell fan. I think this guy could be the steal of the draft, not for the Dolphins, for the whole league. if he recovers from that knee injury. He's a guy who I compare him to Chris Chambers, just a big, solid, physical receiver with a lot of skills. He could really be good, but as far as these other receivers, I just don't see a whole lot. I think Devon Achane could be your leading receiver. Greg Dulcich could be number two. But I will say this, Joe, and you know, I've said this on another podcast that I do, The Fish Tank with Seth Levitt, the Dolphins' former media relations guy, and O.J. McDuffie. You know, when you look at that ESPN top 10 quarterback list, the last two Super Bowl winners, Sam Darnold and Jalen Hurts, were honorable mention. They weren't in the top 10. And so I think that's kind of what I want from Malik Willis, is him to be the guy who makes those timely plays, but isn't necessarily considered a top quarterback. But by the system that you play, the way Seattle did it, the way Philly did it, you can still win a Super Bowl. So I'm not necessarily looking for Malik to be Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. To me, you know, be Sam Darnold or Jalen Hurts and be in a good system and you can still make it work. To me, that fits in with the receiver problem also, that the receivers fit into kind of a greater thing. You don't need another Tyreek Hill. You know, you need somebody who can fit the system, meaning you've got a good defense, you've got a good run game, you've got an adequate passing game to good passing game, and good play from the quarterback. You don't need Hall of Famers at every single position. Get a good system and good players.
Perk, do we get more out of these 13 guys in this draft or the eight from the draft before, the year before, who all played a lot of football last year?
Man, I like that draft class from 2025. The problem is, and I've heard Dave Hyde say this about the defensive players, I don't know that there's a specialized thing that many of them have from last year. So, you know, you look at those defensive tackles, and you do have some talent among Kenneth Grant and Jordan Phillips and Zeke Biggers. But do you have somebody who can really rush the passer from the inside, somebody who can really shut down the run? I think they're all still developing. So I think you have more potential from that 2025 draft class than this year, but I need to see these guys specialize in some things. You guys know I love Jordan Phillips and Dante Trader. I think those guys are going to be really, really good players for the Dolphins. The others in 2025, we could see some contributions. This year's draft class, Proctor, I'm still thinking I probably would have taken Reuben Bain over him, but we'll see how that turns out. The rest of the draft class, I'm very wait and see. I like the talent at linebacker. I like the talent at receiver that they got. I like Chris Johnson, but I'm very wait and see on all of those guys. Last year's draft class, they got on the field. They did some decent things. So I'm more optimistic about last year's class.
Let me just follow this up. Perk, we got 13 guys we drafted. There better be five or six guys playing right away. And I'm not saying they have to start as in the first play of the game, but yeah, their ass better be rotating in our offense or defense. I mean, you can't have 13 guys in a draft class with the lack of skill set and production. Nobody's done anything. They better be playing a lot of those 13 guys, or why do we have all of those picks? And I mean early on. You agree with that or no?
Yeah. I agree with that. They've got to play, which I just don't know which ones have star potential. Look, Proctor and Johnson better have star potential.
Right off the bat.
They were the two first-round picks. Right, they better. I'm not convinced that they will. Jacob Rodriguez and Trey Moore and Kyle Lewis, I think, are going to be good rotational players. Those are the three linebackers that they drafted. What roles are they going to have? I don't know. So that's kind of why I want to see how this draft class shakes out. I think that they got good talent, but I don't know what these guys can necessarily do. I don't know who the pass rusher is out of this draft class. Maybe it's Trey Moore, the linebacker. Maybe it's Max Llewellyn, the seventh round pick, but I just don't really know the roles for these guys at this point. Caleb Douglas, the third-round wide receiver, he's good. I think Chris Bell is definitely potentially better. But so I need to see how these guys are going to contribute. But I agree with you. They need to get in there and play 100%. That would be a huge disappointment if they didn't have five or six of these guys regularly in the rotation.
All right, Perk, you don't draft Jacob Rodriguez high in the second round to sit on the bench.
Play special teams.
And you don't obviously don't sign Jordan Brooks. He's not going to sit. Which leaves Tyrell Dotson. What is going to be? I assume he's going. He started his career special teams. He might end there or a trade. Not that you'll get a lot, but you need a lot. So maybe you swap him for a cornerback or something. What's going to happen here at linebacker?
We have to wait and see, Dave, because I think joint practices are going to be a big measuring stick, and then the post-training camp cuts are going to be a big opportunity. So if you get in joint practices and you see Tyrell Dotson can't do what you need him to do, or you see one of the youngsters does it better, then, yeah, he becomes a trade candidate. But I don't think you see that until after the joint practices, and I don't think you get the real opportunity to pick up the talent until after the training camp cuts come. So it could be that he just, or not even Dotson, anybody, any veteran, just plays a lower role until you see, you know, what you can get for him, what's going to happen there at that position. But, you know, really, I think at linebacker, that's going to be an interesting thing with the Jeff Hafley defense, because I think this team is going to do a lot of situational substitutions as opposed to that. Just leave them out there. Big tight end, Kyle Lewis defends them. Pass rush situation, Trey Moore. First down run stopper, maybe that's Dotson. Maybe if you need an all around, maybe that's Jacob Rodriguez. So I, again, the roles, I don't know what these youngsters specialize in, but I think they're going to play. And I think that the Hafley defense, I'm really excited to see it because I think it's going to be very situational, which,
yes,
let's face it, football is situational.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. There's going to be a lot of guys playing in different packages and different downs and situations.
Right.
Hey, you're a little slow mentioning our fourth pick. You just mentioned him late here, Caleb Douglas, first third-round pick of the three. We don't talk about him much. He's 6'4". He's a big guy that can run fast. We know that. Yep. That's a good start. But I know we didn't get to see a lot out there, but they got to be counting on this guy just by where he was picked, that he's going to get every opportunity to be rotating in there, isn't he, right in the start of September? 100%. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? Malik Willis really likes him. You know, Malik told us that at either minicamp or OTAs, he was like, you know, he's a long guy, Caleb Douglas, and it kind of looks like he's not running fast, but that dude covers a lot of ground. So, you know, and I after Malik said that, I started looking at Caleb, and I was like, you know what? He's kind of right about that. So That is something that Caleb does very well. He covers a lot of ground. So let's see what other distinguishing skills that he can establish in training camp that can get him out there on the field. But while he's not fast, he does cover a lot of ground, and that can be very beneficial. So let's see how Malik is able to use that. Let's see how Caleb Douglas is able to harness that and get an edge on defensive backs. But that was one of those real intangibles that Malik pointed out about Caleb that I hadn't spotted.
All right, over-under wins this year, 4.5. You're going into camp. Where are you with this team?
All right, you know, my big thing is the most important thing out of this season to come out, you got to know that Sully is the right GM, that Half is the right head coach, that Malik is the right quarterback. That is your number one objective for the season. After that, win 5 games. That's what Flo did in 2019, right? After that horrible start, 0-7, those first 3 games, they lost. I think the combined score was 133-16. They got crushed.
Yeah.
And people are, oh, they're only going to win one game. No, they, you know, Flo got them in line. So bad team. I think 5 wins is kind of the standard, but it's not about wins. It's making sure you selected the right GM, the right head coach, and the right quarterback.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Because I know you've been getting hit with everything like everybody else. Like, how many games? Everybody just wants to go, how many games are we going to win, right? You're getting a lot of that. And nobody's like, hey, you understand everything here. This is not a normal year, man. It's a year to clean up all the trash.
It's a year about the future. It's a year about the rebuild. Did we put the right people in place at the top? And then you can proceed. That right? Didn't New England do that with – they go from 4 wins, but they knew they had their head coach. They knew they had their quarterback. They knew they had their GM. You know, these things are done very quickly nowadays if you have the right people. Look at Jacksonville with Liam Cohen and with their 35-year-old GM. Is it James Gladstone? If you have the right people at the top, you know, Jacksonville won 13 games last year. You can get things moving. So to me, that's the number one objective for the Dolphins. Make sure you have the right people at the top. If you don't, I'm not sure you can call this season a success.
Perk, thank you, man. Really appreciate you getting up with us early. How's everything else going? Was the social life good in the offseason? You all right, right?
We just got to get an update here.
Social life is good, man. I got no complaints there. I told y'all I was supposed to be going to Madrid, but that didn't work out. But I went to Costa Rica earlier in the spring, and that was good. It was the same friend with benefits. So, you know, I'm good. Life is good.
Costa Rica.
Internationally.
Costa Rica, you didn't have to take anybody, man. That's a slam dunk over there, man. I got my cousin. Go ahead.
I went to the quiet part, the part with all the resorts and retreats and all that. Place where people go for these the hot yoga and all that. I was on the tame side. Yeah.
Okay. I got my cousin, man. My cousin back home, he walked in and said, "Hey, I'm getting divorced," and told her I'm done, and wasn't happy, and he was getting ready to retire, and he went to Costa Rica.
And he never came back?
And we can't find him now. We know he's got his golf clubs. And
did you see him over there, Perk?
He got a place, man.
Somebody looks like Joe Rose.
Well, I'll tell you what. You can't even get him to come back to the United States. It's so good over there, man. It's crazy. Perk, thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk.
All right. Chris Perkins joining us this morning. A little bit. Really haven't taken that angle. Like, first year is about the QB, the head coach, and the GM.
Well, we've talked about the QB, right?
I got news for you.
You want to come out of this saying.
GM and head coach need more than 1 year.
It's going to be a hard one to judge. Now, to Perks, what he was saying was, look, Brian Flores held it together, right? And that was
he went
a, five that
and
was
four
a question.
Last night.
Yeah, that was a question with that roster and that team. And all the he was saying we're not tanking, and the front office saying we're tanking. I mean, so
Brian Flores' last game. Do you remember his last game that year?
New England.
They went in there and beat Brady on the last second in the end zone through a touchdown pass.
I remember Ryan Fitzpatrick carrying Devontae Parker off the field, or it was the other way around. I can't remember which one was carrying. And I also remember standing in that New England locker room afterwards. And
they were playing for something.
And Steve Ross and his contingent were on the other side of the locker room, and they looked just been to a funeral.
Yeah.
Because they said, what was this year about? Yeah. We were trying to get the number one pick, and we have the fifth pick overall.
Right. So, 4 wins.
Yeah.
Fifth pick. Host of Locked On Fins and A to Z Sports NFL analyst joins us. Kyle, good morning. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. Back to school today, huh?
Yeah, back to school. But I got to tell you, man, I can never remember in all my years since getting drafted here, and I've been here since 1980, never remember a better opportunity in every scenario possible for a draft class and rookie free agents, 24, 25, the whole group there, of having a great opportunity to make the 53-man roster as this group has, considering what has happened to this team in the last 6 or 7 months.
Well, absolutely. It's wide open. You know, there's you look at a handful of positions and a handful of names that have either, you know, holdovers from the last regime that were high draft picks, and even those guys, you know, that I think there's less guaranteed to them than the guys that got a big vote of confidence with a new contract. And I think Malik Willis, Aaron Brewer, Devon Achane, like those big contracts, yeah, those guys are kind of the keystones of what you're building with, but everything else is, you know, the guys in this draft class, probably they're going to want to see him play because they pick them with their vision for what they want this to look like. And that's going to provide them with a lot of opportunity, but nothing's guaranteed. You know, these guys probably have some edges if they were brought in by this staff as compared to holdovers for a lot of those spots. But it's going to be an exciting stretch for figuring out what this is going to look like because there's so many spots, Joe, that it's could look and say, hey, there's
no idea.
He played.
Yeah, I agree. In some cases, we got guys with zero experience playing against guys with zero experience. I mean, like, oh, you played a little bit on special teams. I haven't played at all. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy one. So I want to get into this one last time with you, and I swear I'm done. And there's going to be articles, and again, our guys got to do articles and fill out till, you know, we get into camp, and then there'll be a lot of great stories on different positions and competitions and everything else. In my opinion, this team got to try to win. That 2019 thing should never, ever happen again. Going back to what happened and what we won, went 5-4 in the last 9 games that year, and with the whole thing with Brian Flores, and you know, everybody was mad. We didn't either. We should have sucked, and we started 0-7. We're on our way to getting the first. I hate that. I don't like it. It didn't work then, and in my opinion, it didn't work because you don't get the right guys anyway. You try to win, you develop, and you play your best players, right? You want learned guys to compete and try to win every game. Are you on that, or are you already thinking about a quarterback or wide receiver for next year?
No, I'm not thinking about any of that because you look at the prize from that year's draft class. Joe Burrow, Bengals have missed the playoffs the last 3 seasons. So as good as Joe Burrow is, if you don't build the whole thing right, regardless,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. So I think that's the biggest thing. And how many times we got to look up and down the hierarchy of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and how many of them were drafted first overall versus a team that made the playoffs in Kansas City that trades up. Buffalo, you know, gets Josh Allen at 7th overall. Lamar Jackson goes at 32 overall. There's all these examples where if you're just focused on building a very strong, fundamentally sound core of your football operation, a lot of these problems are going to take care of themselves. And that's what I'm worried about. And you can find good players every single year. You can find good quarterbacks that aren't the first quarterback taken because so much of that is about the fit with the player and the system and the talent around him as much as it is, hey, is this guy physically gifted enough, and how well does he read coverages when he comes into the league? Because with the right guy, with the right coaches around him, that stuff can grow and develop. And we just unfortunately haven't seen that take place in South Florida in a while. So that's, I think, where a lot of the eagerness is that, hey, we got to get the first pick because it's can't miss. Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. Hey, the other part of this, I got asked this yesterday. John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Hafley, your general manager and head coach, you got to give him some time on this. I mean, I think we've done a good job trying to educate everybody on what has happened here and this disaster that we're trying to clean up right now. Those guys are going to need some time on this, right? We can't, after year one, we got to get rid of this guy. No, he couldn't coach. I knew he couldn't. They're going to need some time. And by the way, when you haven't been to playoffs in 26 years, it's hard to ask a fan base to be patient.
Yeah, you cannot ask Jeff Hafley and John Eric Sullivan to pay for the sins of Cam Cameron and Nick Saban and Tony Sparano and Adam Gase and who am I forgetting there?
I don't know. You're on a roll there, man. You're covering 26 years. Man, that was good. You covered 26 years.
Yeah. Dennis Hickey, Mike Tannenbaum, like the list goes on and on. Right?
Oh,
this has to be square one with these guys. And I think everybody has an understanding 60% of your salary cap allotment is the players no longer on the team. You're trying to compete and build this thing up, but you are exceptionally limited to a degree in which we've almost never seen in the NFL before. So it's a very unique set of circumstances.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like this with this team.
That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to ask you, Malik Willis, you know, somebody had an article, and you see all these articles. Oh, he's a one and done here, and he won't work out, and we'll get a new guy next year and all this stuff. What does Malik Willis need to do, considering what he has around him? He has potentially a good offensive line if everything goes right. I think it could be improved. Especially with a first-round pick in there. But for you, Malik Willis, does he have enough to show that he can be the quarterback of the future?
I certainly think you can evaluate a player in a vacuum. It's just harder if you have all of the questions around the cast that maybe we do with the passing game. But somebody's going to step up and catch a football and have chemistry with him. Right? And
yes, I agree with
Greg
that.
Greg Dulcich or Malik Washington or one of the rookies or Jalen Tolbert, whoever it is, there's going to be a guy that probably puts up 750 receiving yards that's never put that kind of number up before. there's probably going to be somebody else that's putting up 650 yards that never put that kind of number up before. The volume is probably going to get you to respectable numbers for some guys, and that's a whole other separate conversation about, well, did he do that because of the situation or because of his talent level? For Malik, control what you can control, make good decisions with the football, protect yourself when you run, but we want you to use your legs and let that be a weapon and part of your game. Stay healthy all season, and let the natural physical ability that he has show. And if he's able to protect the football, not make unforced errors, orchestrate the offense, stay healthy, I think that's all you can ask of him. And based on how they've talked about him, I think that would be considered really strong progress in trying to build around him. But again, you know, if they end up with a very high draft pick and all those things happen and they fall in love with a quarterback, I wouldn't blame them if they did draft a quarterback, because Malik is on a 3-year deal with 2 years of guaranteed salary. So, you know, you give that goes back to that whole talking point about competition in the quarterback room and, wow, they didn't do it this year because they didn't draft anybody. Like, I think that's probably a multi-year process to get to that point. So, you know, I would say anything and everything is on the table, but the best you can ask for Malik Willis is you don't put the ball in harm's way. You are clean with your operation of the offense. You're a good leader, and the dual threat and physical ability that you have shows up every single week.
Yeah.
If those things happen, that's what I'm hoping for Malik Willis.
Everybody's been talking about Dolphins don't have a one or a two, a number one receiver or a number two receiver. If that's the case, how difficult is it going to be? Because, listen, we kind of know what ones and twos look like. We just had it for a little while, what a top-notch number one looks like and a top-notch number two in Waddle.
Yeah, I think what that looks like is more pure progression-based passing. You know, there's that, and that's part of the evaluation from Malik Willis. If you don't have a number one that you're going to automatically set as your number one primary and the first read in all of your progressions, well, you take your snap and you diagnose the shift in the shell of the defense and you say, okay, I think they're playing this coverage based on this movement. Is the primary, in theory, going to be there? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, you throw the ball. If the answer is no, you work, and eventually you'll find space, whether that's a whole bunch of checkdowns to stay on schedule, which might be a boring way to play football. But you can only cover so much grass on defense if you're playing zone coverage. So that's where, and I don't think you're going to get a lot of man. You might get it some weeks, depending on what the team has from a pass rush perspective, but you don't want to play a lot of man coverage against Malik Willis and have all these guys in the back seven turning their back to the quarterback.
I agree.
So I think you'll see pure progression-based, and I think it'll be very even as far as the distribution of the football if you don't have a guy. And I don't think having a guy that has to get 170 targets every single year is the worst thing in the world, as long as you are able to operate the progressions of the offense as the quarterback.
Are you worried about I'm bouncing on you here early because we've still got a week before the veterans get to camp here. Are you worried about pass rush overall and those numbers looking as far as sacks and hits on the quarterback and pressures not being there? Or can they get creative enough to cover up for it if they don't have pure talent at those positions, especially on the outside?
I think there's a few spots that are going to be really important to determining that, because we do want to be, we've heard Jeff Hafley talk about how we do want to be multiple with our fronts. We want to present a bunch of different things, force quarterbacks to process after the snap. I think you have to have somebody that blurs the lines between whether you are in a 3-4 or a 4-3 under, you know, from a structure standpoint, as far as who are we blocking, who's actually coming, who are the threats. That's where I think Jeff Hafley's scheme ability is going to have to show up a little bit for Miami, because I don't necessarily look at this group. Now, if you tell me we're in 3rd and 12 and we got speedy, twitchy guys like Chop Robinson and Josh Uche on the edge, like, I think that's a great situation. That's the best situation for those guys based off what they've shown as NFL players. And I think the defensive tackles will be a year better because three of the four top guys are all second-year players this year. So if you can get into those really advantageous situations, I think they're physically capable of being very disruptive. But as far as your 1st and 10 stuff, your 3rd and 6 when you got to be kept a little bit more modest, that's where I think some of that weight, I think, is going to have to shift to Jeff Hafley this season.
Yeah, it's this whole thing is going to be fun to watch. And as I said, it just looks so open at so many different positions. Jacob Rodriguez and Dotson. Dotson, by the way, is kind of the guy we talk so much about. Jordan Brooks. We don't talk. I thought Dotson was really good. I know he missed a little bit of time. Not much, but a little bit. Missed a game or two. But, boy, together, those guys had a ton of tackles. And Dotson's a vocal one. He's the one that screams out what's going on, and he gets after it. They drafted the best guy, Jacob Rodriguez, a really good player. How do they how we get playing time for everybody to keep everybody happy back there?
I don't know that you do. I think that's one of the challenges with the depth chart, where you look at all these positions and you're like, we have unproven players for depth. We don't know what the ceiling is of the starters. You look at the linebackers, that room's looking really nice now. Yeah. And I don't envy trying to sort out between Jacob Rodriguez, who you just know they want to get on the field, and what Tyrell Dotson was last year. But I think those two guys probably are going to be competing for playing time throughout camp. And it's a matter of how quickly Jacob Rodriguez picks up some of the vocal stuff. Or alternatively, you know, do they find somebody else to wear the green dot, whether that's Jordan Brooks?
Yeah.
Is that one of the safeties, or they put it a little bit further back? Like, if that happens, I think that even more opens the door for Jacob to seize playing time early. And that goes back to the first thing we talked about, guys that were brought in from this regime. I mean, Tyrell Dotson, I think, is a sufficient level starting linebacker in the NFL. If you took all the linebackers across the league and put them in a bucket, if you told me he was a starter, I'd be like, okay, he's got things that he can work with, and he's got strengths that we can use to help us be a better defense.
Dulcet,
this group brought him in. This group brought in Jacob Rodriguez. So I think if all things were equal, they would want to see Jacob play, because he's not in a contract year and a veteran. He's a rookie on a rookie contract.
I'll leave you with this one. Just from what you've seen, every time I'm out there, he caught a zillion footballs. Greg Dulcich, and when a quarterback, by the way, likes to throw to you, they throw to you. No matter what goes on, they're going to be looking as you get in 11-on-11 and 7-on-7 because they trust you. I think Greg Dulcich is going to have a big – I'm not saying 1,000 yards, but I can see him 70-plus catches. How about you?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think he's got a great chance to be the leading receiver on the team this year. Every time I see Malik on social and he's posting the clips, or his quarterback coach, his private quarterback's coach, Sean McAvoy, is posting clips on social media of their workout sessions, you know who's always there? Greg Dulcich.
Smart.
Like, they're getting a lot of reps.
Yeah.
So they had chemistry in the spring. They've been continuing to work together in the summer. Greg was, I think, excellent in the back half of the season last year with what the offense was. I think he's my leader in the clubhouse for who ends up being the leading receiver on this football team.
That's a good way to leave it. That's a good teaser for the week. Next time we talk, we'll be talking about the veterans. Kyle, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. I'll see you next week. I'm coming down on Tuesday.
Oh, great, great. We got to go back out. What's the restaurant we eat at for breakfast? Love that place. I've been there without you, man. What was the name of that place again?
Cracker Barrel.
Damn, I can never remember the name. Damn, I love that place.
It's that country boy breakfast for like $12.
Oh, my God.
More food than you can eat.
So good, man. All right. That's a good way to end it. Now I'm hungry, too. Thank you, Kyle.
Sorry.
Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Fins and A to Z Sports NFL Analyst. I can never remember the friggin' name Cracker Barrel, man. I was living at it, man, when my daughter was going to up in Gainesville. All right, welcome back here on a Friday. Well, I'll tell you what, Mike's been coming on with us, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, for a long, long time. And the guy doesn't miss shows, man. I got to give it to him as he joins us this morning as we get ready. We're in rookie camp. Veterans, some have already reported. The Dolphins next week will report as we say good morning to Mike. And, God, Mike, we got a lot of stuff. I got to tell you, I like your Aaron Rodgers stuff. I wanted to start with that because I grew up in a town right next to Aaron Rodgers. And we both went to the same school. It's been interesting. And my family, some of them know his family, his father, and had nothing but great things to say about him. And he finally, after all these years, as crazy as the story is, I don't know if it's our business or not, but 10 plus years, and he takes a picture after all these years with mom, dad, and his brother and his nephew and niece. I thought it was pretty cool too.
Well, for high profile athletes in a high profile sport, everything becomes our business. And when the athlete chooses to put the photos out there after it's already well known and firmly established that there's been estrangement, that makes it fair game. And as a threshold matter, I think it's a very good thing for anyone to have a solid relationship with their immediate family members. I know in some situations it's impossible. In a lot of situations, it's not. It's just stubbornness. And the people involved in the family, they build a wall. The wall's there. Nobody wants to be the one to make the first move to put a sledgehammer to the wall. And
right.
when something That's does,
true.
You can get everybody back together again. Life's too short for a lot of things. It's definitely too short to not have a strong relationship with your family, because you're on beyond your family, who do you really have? Your friends will scatter under certain circumstances. Your family, in theory, won't. And I think it's an encouraging sign at a deeper level, because it shows that Aaron Rodgers is in a stage in his life where he's reflecting, he's changing. And I think it's encouraging as it relates to the renewed relationship with Mike McCarthy, because it didn't end well with McCarthy and Rodgers in Green Bay. If you look at Tyler Dunn's reporting, he was at Bleacher Report at the time. There was a lengthy article that made it clear there was real tension, if not acrimony, between Rodgers and McCarthy a decade ago. And if Rodgers is putting things in the rearview mirror and looking for ways to build bridges, he'd put anyone who ran afoul of whatever it was, whatever that line was, he put them on the island. It was explained in the biography that Ian O'Connor put out a couple of years ago. You end up on the island, you're cut off forever.
Right.
From Aaron Rodgers. It's good he's getting past that. And it suggests that this last year, he's really looking into the mirror, making changes that he thinks he needs to make. It's good for him. It's good for his family. And it's good for the Steelers in a roundabout way.
Another one off the football field right now, and it's another quarterback. It's been really interesting. He lives down here now, Tom Brady. And just watching everything from his production companies doing great. I know a lot of people, the documentaries, the card business, his cards are valuable. He's got card stores. He got a $275 million contract with Fox to do their games as a number one analyst. He's got Raider ownership as well, and some have said that little percentage is worth a ton of money. And all the things we talk about, and I got to tell you, I'm watching, I'm liking, like a lot of people, and you see the World Cup finals, and he's flipping off Logan Paul, and they're slapping each other at the Fanatics. And my first thought was the same thing, like, wait a sec, dude, you're Tom Brady. You might be the greatest you are the greatest quarterback and maybe the greatest player of all time. Mike, that's up for debate, but what are you doing, man, with this WWE thing? That was my take on it. And I get it. There may be business ties in with this somewhere, but what was your take on the picture of him flipping off Logan Paul, who, you know, I'm not a Logan Paul fan, but what were your thoughts?
Well, not that I have an issue with the middle finger. Chris Sims, who I've been with for nearly 10 years now, has completely desensitized me to the idea of firing off the middle finger anywhere and everywhere. But this just feels cheesy and hokey. It's all aiming toward Brady somehow, some way, presumably at WrestleMania, which is going to be in Saudi Arabia next year, taking on Logan Paul. Dan Patrick thinks it's going to be Brady and Gronk against the two Paul brothers at WrestleMania, whatever number it's going to be. And it does feel beneath Tom Brady. So the people who believe this are complimenting him in a roundabout way. Like, Tom, this, number one, you don't need to do this. And he's written in his newsletter about finding balance in his life. And then he's constantly looking for more ways to stretch the rubber band, whether he's trying to chase paychecks, whether it's just a midlife crisis run amok, it's just insecurity on top of insecurity. He feels compelled to be everywhere and do everything. And I've thought all along that he and Peyton Manning are in a very, very cold war to see who can make the most money to own an NFL team, not part of one, all of one. And you look at what the franchise values are becoming. I don't think those guys are ever going to have the kind of money necessary to write the check for 30% of the purchase price of an NFL team, because as they keep making more money, the price for a team keeps going up exponentially. I don't think he's ever going to catch that chicken. And it dawned on me, and this was prompted by a question I got from a PFT reader, if it isn't madness, what's the method to it? And that's when the light flickered. And look, this would have sounded crazy 15 years ago. How can you get into politics with no political experience whatsoever? But I started to poke around and see what's out there, and I tripped over an article from a few years back where Sam Bankman-Fried, who's now incarcerated after the collapse of FTX, but he and Brady were pretty close friends. Brady was caught up in that whole FTX thing. He still is in the litigation in the aftermath of the collapse of the company. But Sam Bankman-Fried wanted Brady to run for president in 2024 on the Republican side against the current president. So when you try to make sense of something that seems nonsensical,
yeah,
maybe it's as simple as expanding his appeal, finding a new potential base of voters who will get behind the idea of Brady trying to run for president. I mean, the guy's clearly got huge aspirations. And if he wants to do it, it's his business. My yeah. point is, there's two ways to look at this. It's just goofy, and there's no plan, and he's just out there doing whatever he feels like doing, no matter how hokey and corny and goofy it seems. Or he's got a bigger play that he's not going to talk about, because that's yeah. the other side of it. If you really want to do politics right, you don't talk about it until it's time to pull the pin on the grenade. And so that's on my radar screen now. At what point will Tom Brady possibly pivot and decide it's time to get into politics? And I'm going to be looking for any and every potential sign to suggest he's moving in that direction.
All right, let's get to a story that makes sense. Fernando Mendoza signs his contract, a quarterback that you can understand what's going on here. Now, on your site, profootballtalk.com, I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but you said it'll play into the decision to play him. And I'm just curious, the Dolphins open against the Raiders, possibly against
fully
Mendoza.
Guaranteed a lot of money.
Yes. So well, how does that move towards the playing field for him?
Well, first of all, you got to be under contract or you're not going to be practicing. I think that the description that was attached to the video I did yesterday didn't properly convey what I was saying. And I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. That happens from time to time. There are two separate things here. Yes, you got to get the guy signed. And there aren't many things to haggle over at this point when it comes to the rookie draft pick contracts, because the amount is known. There are some things like cash flow and guarantees and voids and all of that that come into play. But they finally got it done, which is good. The thing that I'm going to be fascinated by is whether and to what extent there's a competition, or will there even be a competition? Albert Breer of SI.com had something earlier this week suggesting that they're just going to sprinkle Mendoza in with the first team during training camp. And that would be a way to keep a competition from happening if they're truly intent on keeping him on the bench this year, or at least for the start of the season. And I know that worked with Patrick Mahomes 9 years ago in Kansas City, but they had a perennial playoff team. The Raiders need to get the best right. guys ready and on the field. And if there's any hint in that sprinkling of reps that Mendoza gets, if he makes the absolute most out of those and the other members of the starting offense are like, holy crap, how do you hold the guy back? And look, I think Kirk Cousins has been very good. He's been an excellent businessman. That's without question over the course of his career. But he's got one playoff win since entering the NFL in 2012, and he's 37. And he really hasn't been the same guy since the Achilles tendon blew out at Lambeau Field in the 2023 season. If the first overall pick in the draft can't beat out Kirk Cousins at this point in Cousins' career in an open competition, then maybe you drafted the wrong guy. So I feel like they're deliberately putting a restrictor plate on Mendoza's ability to compete, because they know if it's a competition, he'll win it. And they'll have to go with him. And whatever I understand, you know, the reason, and you can talk it all day long, and Clint Kubiak, the new coach, seems to like this idea of letting Mendoza learn by watching. But I'm a firm believer in learning by playing, because the game doesn't begin to slow down from the sideline. The game starts to slow down when you're out there. Now, you don't want to ruin the guy. I remember Giovanni Carmazzi, one of the Brady six. He was taken in the third round by the 49ers back in 2000. Steve Mariucci believes that Carmucci's experience in the Hall of Fame game that year, coincidentally against Brady's Patriots, ruined him. So you don't want to ruin a guy. by throwing him out there too early. But again, if the guy's going to get ruined in an exhibition game, he shouldn't have been the first overall pick in the draft. So I just don't understand why a team like the Raiders that hasn't won a playoff game since the year they went to the Super Bowl, 2002, they've been to the playoffs only twice since then. Why are you not opening this up and getting this kid ready and getting him out there? And yeah, he may take some lumps this year, but I think back to Troy Aikman, his rookie year at the Cowboys. They were horrible. And what did it do? It laid the foundation for Aikman to become the guy he became. And that's the trend now in the NFL. It's not let the guy sit. It's a one-year-at-a-time league. Let him compete, and if he wins, let him play. So I feel like it's a rigged non-competition aimed at keeping Mendoza down for a year when he could be, if he had a full chance, the better option between – and he should be the better option between himself and Kirk Cousins.
And they open against the Miami Dolphins on the road. I mean, at home. They'll be at home. And he's, of course, that's his hometown team. Yeah, it would have been – it would be nice to see him in that situation if he could start. Hey, finally, I got to ask you, I thought it was great. The NFL and ESPN relationship now, NFL owns 10% of ESPN, and how some of these topics like Brian Flores and this whole lawsuit is going to be handled. It's going to be really interesting. There's so many parts. I could go an hour with you, Mike, on this, and I know it's your background. What's going to happen with Brian Flores? Is there a chance he just takes, they offer him a bunch of money, and he just says, I'm done. I got my money now. I brought it up to everybody. It's not fair. The Rooney rule doesn't work, but I got mine. Or does he stay in the fight?
That case was filed February 1 of 2022. We're 4.5 years into it. And it is still stuck at square one. Just last week, the federal judge presiding over the case, in response to the NFL's latest effort to try to get her to reconsider a decision she'd already reconsidered and it had been appealed, this whole question of whether or not they're going to be in open court or in the NFL's what I call secret rigged kangaroo court of arbitration, where they try to put any claim against them. They want to get out of the courts. They want to have a forum where it's tilted in their advantage, and they want to keep everything secret. When it's in open court, there's a lot of stuff that gets filed, and eventually there's going to be a trial that is going to be in an open courtroom, and reporters are going to be there hearing all the evidence. And this is the through line that I saw from the ESPN item earlier this week about the frustrations that minority coaches have when it comes to the Rooney rule, how it applies, how it's used. You just check boxes, and it's a sham interview, and they have some tangible examples of it. But the only way the NFL is ever going to change its ways, and I know there will be people, including the attorney general of your state, that would like to debate the merits of that. There is no debate when you look at the statistics and the raw numbers over the years. And Troy Vincent, the executive VP of football operations, he said things publicly that made it into Brian Flores' original complaint that basically admits they've got a problem. The only way the problem is going to be addressed and solved is if it's hashed out at a trial, after they've questioned owners, reviewed documents, cobbled a case together, and then the NFL has to take a verdict on it. And win or lose, all that stuff that comes out could be enough to get the NFL to finally come up with meaningful changes, because the Rooney rule hasn't done it. No amount of public scrutiny or pressure does it, because you know what they do? You have a hiring cycle, and like this past year, 10 openings, no black coaches were hired for any of the openings. The commissioner offers up the standard response at the Super Bowl press conference, and then it just dies down, and it's lather, rinse, repeat year after year after year. Nothing is going to change behavior like the NFL going to trial and losing. So that's why that case is important. And to land the plane on the question you asked, at some point, they will start throwing money at it. And at some point, even if you say, there's no way I'm settling this case, at some point, there's going to be a number that you're going to look at and you're going to say, hey, Jim Trotter had to talk about the sale. Jim Trotter had the audacity, while he was working for the NFL through NFL Network, to ask the commissioner questions at two straight Super Bowl press conferences about diversity in the newsroom. And his contract was not renewed, and they didn't have an arbitration clause in his contract. And he had them on the run. And the next thing you know, and I thought he was going to see it all the way through to the end. The next thing you know, the case is over and he's retired. And, you know, the part of the settlement, I believe, funds scholarships. And so, you know, you can do some good with a settlement.
Right.
But you also, there's a number out there where principal is going to take a back seat. And the question is, will Flores hold firm? And he seems wired to say at the end of the day, nope, 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 because there is something bigger at play here. And if it doesn't get resolved through this case, I don't think it ever will.
Yeah. Interesting. Still defensive coordinator as the Dolphins will see Minnesota this year as well. Hey, Mike, thank you, brother. Really appreciate you coming on as always. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. My God, crazy stuff.